Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back. I'm very pleased to say we have with us David Satter, one of the country's great experts on Russia, and before that, the Soviet Union, gained from insights in his extensive experience reporting from Moscow for the Financial Times and the Wall Street Journal and other outlets. He is an author of numerous important books, including, not least, The Less You Know, The Better You Sleep, Russia's Road to Terror and Dictatorship Under Yeltsin and Putin. Also, Age of Delirium, The Decline and Fall of the Soviet Union, the subject of a terrific film by David Satter as well. He is associated with two terrific organizations, the Hudson Institute, also my alma mater, the Johns Hopkins University School of Advanced International Studies. He serves as a senior fellow in both organizations. David, it's so good to have you back. Thank you. Gosh knows there's a lot going on in your portfolio. It's good to have a chance to catch up with you a little bit about it.
No, I'm glad to be with you.
Let me ask you, David, we've been talking with a number of guests today and in the recent past, of course, about this meeting between Vladimir Putin of Russia and Donald Trump. At the G20 meeting, much has been made of the fact that it went on rather long and ceasefire was announced out of it affecting Syria. But I'm particularly interested in your thoughts as to the nature of Vladimir Putin and the likelihood that really any good can come of trying to forge a close relationship with him by the President of the United States.
Well, I don't think that it's possible to have a close positive relationship with him. These meetings, the summit meetings, are always used for manipulation. They're basically two things that Putin got out of it. One was he got Trump to say that, there was good chemistry between the two of them. And he also got to announce a ceasefire in Syria. So what he's done is he's created a situation where, in the eyes of world opinion, everyone is convinced of the importance of negotiations, of the importance of reaching agreement with Russia, of meeting with them. And in fact, the ceasefire will not last long. And as for the personal chemistry, it's meaningless. But this is the kind of thing that happens every time the President of the United States meets with Putin. We saw this with Bush. We saw this with Obama. It creates a false impression of the relationship and of the possibilities, and it then ends up in encouraging unrealistic policies.
We talked earlier in the program with several guests about the charges that are dogging Donald Trump about Russia, specifically the idea that his campaign, even members of his own family, engaged in some kind of collusion with the Russians aimed at trying to throw the election to him. Knowing what you do about both Putin, the operative, and the regime that he leads, what do you make of this saga at this point, and specifically this most recent chapter of the president's son, Donald Trump Jr., meeting with others and an attorney said to be close to the Kremlin?
Well, I mean, what's astonishing here is the kind of crisis of journalism that we're seeing. This story about Donald Trump is based on three unnamed sources. That in itself is suspicious. When you have more than one, you don't need three unnamed sources. You need one named source and a source that's reliable. The more sources they start listing, the more suspicious it becomes, especially when those sources are anonymous, because one wasn't good enough. This talking about an email which was not shown to the New York Times reporters, which they don't produce, which they haven't seen, which is only described to them, which doesn't state that there's Russian that Donald Trump was told of Russian government interest, but quote unquote indicates that there was Russian government interest. That, frankly, is not a story. I was the Moscow correspondent of the Financial Times. I worked in totalitarian conditions in which people risked not their careers, but their lives. And under those circumstances, you can relax some of the rules about attribution. In this case, there's no such risk, but to behave as if we're in a totalitarian country to have this kind of shoddy sourcing is absolutely unprofessional. And even in the Soviet Union, I would have not accepted this kind of hearsay evidence.
That's such an important point. And I appreciate, David, your long time in the journalistic profession as a sort of moral compass, if nothing else, in terms of the conduct of journalism today. It is seriously wanting, it seems to me, as well. Let me ask you about Russia, the internal situation there. You have been telling us for some time, David Satter, that Vladimir Putin is actually not as popular as we're led to believe, that his hold on power may be somewhat more tenuous, certainly, than he would like us to think, that as a result, he is engaging in a rather more repressive behavior. I don't know that we're quite yet at the standards of the bad old days, but talk a little bit about the internal dynamics in Russia at the moment and how it bears on both this relationship with the United States and most especially the possibility of greater threats by the Russians to their neighbors.
This is a dysfunctional system in Russia. It's based on corruption. It's based on propaganda, and it's based on provocation. And a system like that, by its very nature, is unstable, and the Russians feel that acutely. They fear their own people. As long as they can kind of take advantage of nationalism and chauvinism by starting wars, the way they did in the case of Ukraine, they can rev up the kind of uncritical chauvinism that drowns out doubts about the nature of the regime. But those doubts are always there. And those public opinion polls that show 85% approval are the product of monolithic and unrelenting propaganda.
And fear, I think it's fair to say, too, isn't it?
And fear. And what we've already seen is that young people are not accepting it, that in June and in April, They came out in the streets to protest against the corruption. Now, one could argue that the numbers were not enormous, although they were significant. But what was interesting was the ages of the protesters, oftentimes teenagers and young students, and the fact that the protests embraced cities all over Russia, which is a huge country. That's an indication that the discontent has not been extinguished, that the country is not reconciled to this situation, and a dysfunctional economy that's created as a result of massive thievery is likely to make those numbers swell.
David Satter, we are hard out of time, I'm afraid. There's so much more to talk to you about, including about the kind of evolving policy position of the United States government vis-a-vis Ukraine and what that might portend for this relationship. But that will be for another day. I hope it will be soon. Thank you so much for your time today. And let's get together again in the near future. I hope the rest of you will join us again tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Affney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.